Welcome to the show, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen. You know what that music means. I'm Ben.
I'm Nolan. Apparently, it's a nice day for a white wedding.
Yeah, as we speak, given the just the raw numbers, odds are that there are thousands of couples getting married today, hundreds of thousands even.
It's very true. It is a popular pastime.
And, of course, we are joined by our super producer, Casey Pegram, here. And today we are looking at one of the world's most universal traditions, the tradition of matrimony.
I like to call it nuptials.
Nuptials is cool, too.
It just sounds cute.
Mm-hmm. And we know whether or not you have been married or whether or not you've actually been to a wedding, it's impossible not to know a little bit about it because it's such a fundamental part of so much fiction. It's in so many films, not just rom-coms.
Yeah, but definitely in rom-coms.
Definitely big in rom-coms. So everybody is aware on some level of the basic idea that typically, it's going to be two people who decide that they're going to, in front of members of their society and in the eyes of the law, usually as well.
And the Lord.
And the Lord, right? Whatever Lord that may be.
Precisely.
They're going to be an official item till death do they part.
Unless it's a shotgun wedding.
Unless it's a shotgun wedding.
In which case, you're sort of out of luck. You just got to kind of bite the bullet.
Mm-hmm. Or you have to bite the bullet.
Daddy's bullet.
So at some point, you and I have looked into weird traditions before. Traditions, I want to be fair, traditions that might seem unusual to outsiders. We've looked into this sort of thing before.
Tradition.
Do you know that? You've seen The Fiddler on the Roof?
I have a long time ago.
All about tradition. In fact, one of the most popular songs from it is the song Tradition.
Oh, really?
That goes – like I just sang.
Was that an excerpt or is that the whole thing?
That was just my bit. That's really the only lyric I remember. But there's a whole song around it. You guys can check it out in your own time.
Yes, please do. And while you are checking things out, you may also run into other strange traditions. We're familiar with some wedding traditions like tossing the garter belt.
What's that one about? I've always – that seems so risque.
It's like the person who catches the garter belt traditionally is amongst like the male folk or the grooms, and they're going to get married next.
What? But then the bouquet is the female who's going to get married next.
Yeah. Yeah. At least traditionally. And I know there's some problematic gender norms in there, but – sometimes tradition has problems, right?
Yeah, and, you know, these traditions range from the, you know, innocuous to the bizarre. And the one we're talking about today I find pretty intensely bizarre because at some point in history it became a thing for the happy couple to shove wedding cake into each other's face holes.
Mm-hmm. To have a miniature and intimate food fight in front of everybody else at the wedding, because other wedding members don't do this.
A ritualistic force feeding.
Yes. And we do know that newlyweds beforehand would feed the first slice of wedding cake to one another. And it was a symbol of their commitment, right, to provide for one another. And this comes from Rachel Sylvester, associate real weddings editor with The Knot. However, says Sylvester, the symbolism's often lost and it's been replaced increasingly now with this tradition that Noel just described.
There is a fantastic Dear Abby letter from June of 2011 where Faithful writes into Abby and says, "Dear Abby, I'm writing you about a disgusting, rude, and obscene habit. The bride and groom shoving wedding cake into each other's faces. How rude and insensitive to the person he or she just promised to love, honor, and cherish. Not to mention disrespectful. What do you think of this custom?"
And Dear Abby has – so no mincing words on Faithful's part. And Dear Abby seems to agree, saying, "Dear Faithful, the custom should have been retired at least 50 years ago. The significance of this quote-unquote ritual is demeaning to women."
Right, because – Dear Abby says, according to Curious Customs by Tad Tuleha, the cake cutting at modern weddings is a four-step comedic ritual that sustains masculine prerogatives in the very act of supposedly subverting them. So Abby goes on, in the first step of the comedy, the groom helps direct the hand of the bride in a symbolic demonstration of male control that was unnecessary in the days of more tractable women. And what I love about this is it really pushes home the kind of inherent misogyny in this. It's a little bit of a stretch to me, but I'm going to go with it. I think it's interesting. So the female, the bride, she accepts this gesture. And according to Abby, this serves as further proof of her submissiveness. And then performing the second step of the ritual, which seems to be a twist, where she offers him the first bite of cake. But then playfully, in the third step, she subverts this trope by shoving it in his face playfully, right? And then Abby goes on that this act of revolt is performed in a childish fashion, and the groom is able to endure it without losing face because it ironically demonstrates his superiority. His bride is an imp needing supervision.
And the idea here is that the bride is being infantilized to a degree. I would tend to describe this argument as based in patriarchy, even more so than misogyny, but they're both present there if you believe this. And the idea here is almost, it's depicted at least in this quotation as a ritualistic theater of sorts, as a play almost, and with clear beats to the story. And then the bride has apologetically wiped clean the groom's face and is now obedient to his dignified, somehow inherently wiser self. So you have to wonder how far back does this go? We know in ancient Rome, the bride could expect to conclude festivities by having a barley cake smashed upside her head. So in this case, back in Rome, it was the bride who got cake smashed.
Yeah, and then I found this this great Smithsonian article that details some other early cake traditions, and it says that in medieval England, the bride and groom would kiss each other on top of a pile of buns, and this act was meant to demonstrate and ensure even their prosperity in the years to come.
But there's another weird part about that one.
Yeah, there sure is. The unmarried guests. A lot of these things seem to be for the unmarried guests in general, with the garter and the bouquet and the whole taking home a piece of cake. Because in this ritual, the guests would sometimes take a little piece as a souvenir of this cake that they would tuck under their pillow like the tooth fairy.
Despite the fact that they were very well aware of all the things that happened to it.
And as it turns out, this particular recipe in these early British traditions was something called bride's pie, P-Y-E, which mixed something called coxcombs, which I believe is the frill, the little hand-looking thing on top of a male chicken, mixed that with lamb testicles, sweetbreads, which if for my money, I quite enjoy sweetbreads if they're prepared well, oysters, which are also good, and a lot of spices. And then there was another version of this recipe that included boiled calf's feet.
And this did change in the 16th century. Oh, I want to not forget another note about Rome there. In ancient Rome, it's also argued that this tradition of barley caking was, which I've just made a verb.
I like it.
Oh, thanks, man. This tradition of barley caking was also done to symbolize male dominance and to encourage fertility. And this practice stayed with us today. When did things change? We can date it to around the mid-16th century because sugar was becoming more plentiful and affordable in England.
Yeah, and sugar became a really important ingredient in cakes, not only because it tastes way better than lamb's testicles, one would assume, but also it symbolized the purity and virginity of the bride-to-be. And also, it was a serious status symbol, right, Ben?
Yeah, it was absolutely a serious status symbol because it goes back to the color of it as well as the show of wealth and opulence for the wedding party and the wedding goers. Look at this tremendous cake. And even now we see this. I believe it was during Princess Diana's wedding that the cake was 5 feet tall and they had a stunt double cake in case something happened to the first one.
Yeah, and wedding cakes, are big business these days, and you know, all the, you know, the wedding reality shows
Cake
and the
Boss.
Cooking shows and Cake Boss and all of the fondant and the different versions of these mm-hmm. absurd cakes that you can get in all kinds of shapes and sizes. They can be, you know, like a race car or a volcano that spews forth lava even, or, you know, something like your favorite sports car, perhaps, mm-hmm. or if you're, you know, having a Star Wars wedding, it could be a scale model of Tatooine.
And one person doubled down, right? We read about one bride who had a full-size replica of herself is the cake, which to me is weird.
It's a little vain, maybe.
It's very eat of my flesh.
Typically, you have the tiny bride and groom as the topper of the cake, but that's a real stretch to have an entire cake that appears to be a facsimile of just one member of the wedding party.
Well, if both the bride and her spouse are into it, then it's their call. I would just personally feel kind of weird eating it. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. And in this Smithsonian article by Abigail Tucker, she also talks about how as a cost-saving measure, and I had never heard of this before, but I think this is pretty smart because obviously this big, giant, showy mm-hmm. cake is less about a delicious, delectable treat and more about a show of opulence. But you could actually get a kind of a dummy cake that's made of styrofoam that has a single kind of decoy piece of cake that you can cut out and use for the ceremony, and then the guests just get, you know, a regular old Walmart sheet cake or what have you.
Right, right, which does make sense. And the problem with a styrofoam cake is, you know, you have to be very careful about how you do the cake smashing thing if you choose to do it. You got to pick the one real slice. And it's tough for us being human beings, not just Casey, Noel, and I, it's tough for us to collectively figure out exactly when this cake serving thing became a cake smashing thing. We know it's been around for several decades, but probably not several centuries in this current form. We just know there was stuff like it. And we've walked through the perspective that this is in some ways a folkloric drama, right, acted out. But most people, according to experts, are probably unaware of what this ritual is supposed to signify, seeing it either as a fun riff on cake cutting, you know, because everybody wants their wedding to be fun, right? Everybody has like a little goofy joke of some sort at some point, and they're like, oh, let's play this as our first song. Or they think it's a silly custom that just needs to go away. And
well, it's levity, right? It adds a little fun, a little lighthearted lark to the proceedings.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been at weddings where people do that, but it doesn't ever seem to be a squabble. You know, it just seems to be like they're both, you know, we've had to be serious for a little while. And then, as you said, let's have some levity. But it turns out, Noel, that again, according to Sylvester, this cake smashing tradition is in decline.
I can see why. I mean, it's gross. It's a wedding. It's not like an episode of Double Dare, you know?
And you're not wearing smocks.
No. And although I will say I found a great page with a whole bunch of different photos of various versions of this. And it goes from, you know, bride and groom with their hands in each other's faces, literally rubbing the cake in, to one being a little more aggressive than the other. Ooh. I've got one here where the bride is pretty much pouncing on the groom and just shoving this face. And then I've got another one where the groom is actually wearing a garbage bag, which seemed like probably the smart move, you know, just to save that tuxedo. Those things are not cheap.
Right. No kidding. And you know what else I found? This is an unsubstantiated thing, but apparently it's a pretty widespread rumor. People believe, with, again, no solid proof, that couples who do the wedding cake smashing thing are more likely to be divorced later in life.
Well, as it turns out, Ben, I can speak to that. I am, in fact, divorced. I am what they call a divorcee.
As am I.
Yes, but I did not do the cake smashing, so. Mm-hmm.
And we did not marry each other.
This is true.
Just for the record.
We're just pals.
We're just buddies. But the
we're work wives, kind of.
We do hang out a lot. We're hanging out after this as well. So I was in a one-way cake smashing thing. I just the person I married, she just smashed the cake against my face. And I thought it was funny, you know.
But you're a good sport.
Thanks, man. I try to be. Also, it did get all over the tux, but that made it funnier. And there's more risky business, according to the wedding experts, when you talk about cake smashing. First, cake fans are champing at the bit to point out, it is a waste of good cake.
Yeah, no joke. I mean, some of these absurdly fancy cakes can equal somewhere in the neighborhood of like 12 to 13 bucks a slice. And even just like an average kind of run-of-the-mill wedding cake can be at least $2 or $3 a slice. And, you know, I'm not one to waste good cake, Ben. You know me to be a fan of pastry. And I just feel like this is a tradition that needs to go the way of the brontosaur.
You think so? Yes. So you say nay to cake wasters, huh?
Yeah, I have a real problem with them.
So it's interesting that even in the modern day, some people see it as just all in good fun, and then other people see it as disrespectful and demeaning, and the tradition seems to evolve somewhat organically. You know, there wasn't an article in Vanity Fair or some sort of etiquette guide to weddings that said, and at this point, the bride shall stuff her groom's face with cake, rubbing it hither and fro.
And or thither.
You know what this also made me think of? The world is full of these very specific wedding traditions, you know, and I found just a couple. If you want a laundry list, I want to hear what you think of these.
Sure, shoot.
So in Uyghur culture in China, grooms shoot their future bride with a bow and arrow, minus the arrowheads, three times. And then
what's on the tip of the arrow?
It's just the shaft,
like
I guess.
A suction cup? That would still hurt, though.
One would hope. Then they break the arrows to ensure that the couple stays in love forever.
See, I think I would prefer the cake smashing to getting shot with a projectile. I mean, yeah. You could put an eye out with one of those, man.
Right. And here's another one that I thought, this is one that would be the line for me. And, you know, I really appreciated when you said that I was in general a good sport. I don't know if I could go with this one. In Scotland, there's something called the blackening of the bride. Have you heard of this?
Go on.
So traditionally, Scottish brides-to-be are taken by surprise. Their friends kind of jump them, and they pelt them with stuff like curdled milk, dead fish, spoiled food, tar, and feathers.
Ooh.
And then they're tied to a tree, and then after that, they go out for a night of drinking. And the idea here, the belief is that if the bride can withstand that kind of treatment, she can handle anything that comes her way in marriage.
Can we just skip to the drinking?
I mean, yeah, I don't understand.
That's like some serious, like, military hazing type stuff there. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. When we're talking, you know, it came to mind when we were talking about the cultural implications, right, of smashing cake on someone, and we've seen how it could become aggressive, but I don't think that has anything on this throwing trash at people and tying them to trees.
No, that is not on, my friend. Not on one bit.
Okay, just a couple more of these. I want to gauge you on this and see which ones you think are like understandable.
Gauge me up.
All right. So in Mauritania, girls aged between 5 and 15 are sent to fat farms before their wedding to pile on the pounds, because it's also seen as a status symbol. It's seen as a signal that the groom is wealthy enough to keep the bride satisfied in a very physical way.
Yeah.
And then in another part of China, brides of the Tujia people are required to cry for an hour a day, every day, for the month before their wedding.
Well, that's just like how I live. I have my daily cry. Sometimes it lasts longer than an hour, though. It just depends.
Is it like meditative? Or?
No.
You don't plan it?
No. It just comes upon me.
Well, if you were doing this in preparation for a wedding, 10 days before the wedding, your mother would join you. The mother joins the bride and they cry together, and then the grandmother joins as well.
Yeah, I cry with my mom too, at least one day out of the week.
Well, you know, I mean, whatever it takes, man.
Yeah, nothing like a good phone cry with your mom. Just to, you know, we went and saw the movie Coco the other week, and we cried in tandem during that film with my 8-year-old daughter, who also cried. So it was a 3-way cry.
Cathartic, huh?
It really was.
Is that a Pixar film?
Oh, boy, was it ever. The Pixar cry. That yeah. is where it's at.
I have some friends who refuse to watch Pixar because they feel that it's emotionally manipulated.
It is a little bit, but I, you know, bend me, break me, Pixar, it's fine.
Yeah, they're fantastic stories, honestly. Here's another weird story, and I guess this can be the last unusual tradition. And by the way, Noel and I are not dinging any of these. They're just strange, and they weren't news to us. Newlyweds in France for a while were forced to drink leftovers from their wedding out of a toilet bowl. Nowadays—
What kind of leftovers?
Stuff? Food from the wedding? Yeah.
Jeez.
Noel's making a very distasteful sneer.
Ooh.
Yeah, I agree with you there, man. Nowadays, thankfully, chocolate and champagne are reputedly used as a substitute, but still served out of a toilet.
Okay, then.
Vive la France.
I think we have run the gamut of of odd wedding customs in today's ridiculous history nugget. A little bit of a shorter one, so I think we're going to wrap up today with a couple of really cool, fun listener mails. Our first listener mail today comes from Michelle, and the subject is butter episode. And she goes, I know I'm late to the party with responding to this episode, but I can't leave my feedback unsaid. I love the Butter podcast. It was so interesting that this had such a huge effect on how we practice religion and spirituality and how that has evolved. However, I think you guys missed a critical point with butter itself, which is important in crafting the lens through which you view the issue. You refer to butter as a spread, a seasoning, and a stir-fry agent. If this is all butter is, then by nature it's a luxury, not a necessity. Also, really, stir-fry in medieval Europe? Look, I wasn't saying stir-fry as we know. I just meant, you know, cooking different ingredients with some sort of cooking agent and combining them. Surely that was a thing, like a stew, right? Come on. I don't know. I hear you, Michelle, though. You got me. Ding. Noted. But she goes on, however, the piece you missed is that fat is a crucial ingredient in making bread, which even your vegan monks would have been eating. Bread was the main dietary staple of the time in most of the world. Peasants would not have been able to survive without bread because of, as you mentioned, of the scarcity of food in that part of the world. So these people without butter, the only fat available to them, would have to choose between their family starvation and their immortal soul. I think this changes the lens fundamentally.
You know, I'm tempted to agree, and I really appreciate you pointing that out, Michelle. We've been getting a lot of feedback about the butter episode in particular.
Yeah, most of it quite good. And this one, you know, I don't, she's not being mean. She's got a really good point. We definitely mentioned bread, but I don't think we gave it the weight that it probably deserved. So, Michelle, duly noted, and thank you for writing in and listening to the show.
And no spoilers, but stay tuned, bread fans. So we have one more listener mail for today, and it pertains to our Antarctica episode. Sarah P. writes in to say, Ben and Noel and super producer Casey, I found your podcast yesterday and have quickly gone through every episode, thoroughly enjoying it, as well as your thoughts on whether or not to start a Pinterest account. Sarah, side note here, you'll be glad to know that we have a meeting about it every week. I really enjoyed all of them, says Sarah, and had a question to ask. In regards to the episode about who would have jurisdiction on a case in Antarctica if an incident occurs on a country base that is not the same country as the persons involved, my initial reaction was why not have Interpol take care of the incident? Granted, I am not by any means an expert on the organization, but I feel as an organization that routinely assists multiple nations, they would be the perfect organization to assist a continent that no nation can claim. Whether as a mediator between two countries or as the lead in an investigation, they could be a useful asset on Antarctica. On a side note, as a Philly girl, I must recommend that if you want a good Philly cheesesteak, you have to go to Jim's on South Street. They have the best. No matter what anyone may say, shots fired.
I'm sure that's a serious point of contention in Philly as to who has the best cheesesteak. And I'm sure there are many varying opinions on it. But I am all about trying Nick's if we ever make it to the city of brotherly love.
Let's go. Let's take ridiculous history on the road. Do a live show sponsored by just the idea of Philly cheesesteaks.
I am all about it. And thanks so much for writing in, Michelle and Sarah. And we hope that you will write into us, too, at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. We're still plugging away at that Pinterest vision board, getting there. But, you know, we're going to debut it when the time is right.
Mm-hmm. We're taking a Heinz 57 approach to it. Good things come to those who debate Pinterest boards.
I love it.
But you can also find us in the meantime on various other internet platforms.
We have a Twitter now.
Yes, we do have a Twitter account now. We're going legit, my man.
Man, it's a brave new world.
And we also have an Instagram and a Facebook. You can find Noel and I on several other shows, but as it turns out, we have a lot of things cooking here, and we have some new How Stuff Works shows coming out now.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know our buddy Ken Jennings of Jeopardy fame. I think he's the winningest Jeopardy contestant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he only was finally dethroned by the notorious Watson computer that bested him. But, you know, it's hard to fight back against our robot overlord. So I still love you, Ken. And Ken and his buddy John Roderick, who is in a real cool band called The Long Winters, have a new show that will be available anywhere you get your podcasts by the time you hear this episode, called Omnibus, where they the whole concept is they're podcasting from the present for the people of the distant future, given some sort of monumental catastrophe that would decimate our society. And they want to preserve all kinds of weird esoteric bits of knowledge and curio and do so with aplomb. And they're quite funny and charming, and it's got kind of a fun sci-fi quality to it. I actually was lucky enough, I got to do all the music for it and the sound design. So give Omnibus a listen whenever you get a chance.
And write to them. Tell them Ben and Noel sent you. Maybe that'll, you know, will that give them some cred, or will that be a ding?
I don't know. I think we might need to get cred from them because this show's going to be a hit.
Yes, agreed. And while you're looking for Omnibus, of course, we want to end on the question. Please write to us. Let us know what strange wedding traditions you have encountered or taken part in.
And most importantly, join us next time for another episode of Ridiculous History. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.